This morning we're hosting two special people, Anne and Juan. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
And welcome. You are within the program Safety and Security for Our Children, which the group of people are in preparation for some months now, but you designed already the peer educational training program, and you successfully completed it, at least for the first batch of kids, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What is actually peer education? You name it PET, what that stands for?
So this actually is a PET. So all these PET kind of things, and anytime you see a PET is peer education training.
Mm-hmm.
So to understand these acronyms you're going to see around, and we don't want to use, like, to overuse them. But you have peer education as a methodology,
mm-hmm,
that is basically aiming to empower people in certain contexts, usually vulnerable contexts, to receive enough tools and develop skills so they can become enabling factors of more information, more openness, and hopefully developing life skills to become more adequate in the community. And they can promote, let's say, healthier lifestyles, or to have a different way to approach issues that can be concerning the context in question.
And I think the experiences show that it's easier for peers to help the peers or educate them than maybe parents or teachers and so forth, yeah?
Yeah, it came a little bit with that idea, and just to connect with the initial Safety for Children group that is still working on, and we're still working on it. My idea at the beginning was to say what is the best way to approach young people in distress, or let's say in any kind of issues that deserve attention. I thought that the first level is always their own peers, their own friends, their classmates, their people who is closer to them. And these people actually try to help as much as they can, but they feel so powerless and impotent because they don't necessarily have the skills, mm-hmm, to actually do this thing. So I think these peer education programs try to actually empower the people that is trying to help, but giving them better tools for them to do it, and then connect them with other networks of more professional help that can actually assist in more serious cases.
So if they're not capable to assist somebody who's maybe in really distress, mm-hmm, they can always reach somebody else who is trained for that.
Yeah. That's the idea. And actually also all these people for the first training, we had about 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to create a network,
mm-hmm,
so they can also reach to the other people who had the same training and to us to assess a situation if they can't deal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea, to create a real big network.
You mentioned in the first group there were 20 people, 20 youngsters. Mm-hmm. I think the age limit was 35 or somewhere there, no?
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
How did you choose them, or how they chose to participate?
It was a selection process that we had more applicants. We have over 34 applicants, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically prioritize Orovillians and to have like an even division of gender and the age group. So basically, mm-hmm, we try to stay with very concrete criteria and not going into personal stories.
Yeah,
so we left that apart. Like, there was no personal selection, not personal history in the selection process. So we basically just very hard criteria,
mm-hmm,
and it's basically aimed to have gender balance will be because when they work, the peer education methodology works with co-facilitation.
Mm-hmm.
When you have two people from the opposite genders to work together, because when you usually try to give, when you form the more structured sessions that they already have the skills to start developing, is much effective in a way to do it with both genders, to have more inclusiveness when somebody, you actually need to talk with somebody of your same gender.
Or the opposite,
you see, so it's necessary. So in this case, with having the group already in gender balance, they can start developing these pairs to team up and start developing the sessions. And we're going to have actually the first progress meeting this weekend.
Mm, cool. So you had to reject almost half of them. Are you planning to do another session,
we are planning to. I think first we have to do with this one and just continue to follow them for a few months, and then I think we're planning to make another one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in, let's say, enthusiasm for to do these kind of things amongst the Arab youth is, it seems to me, quite high, no?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Was and I think a lot of people didn't even see, a lot of these young people didn't even see about the project, and a lot of them called me after and said, oh, if we had knew, we would have come. And so actually, I think there is a lot of people interested, and it's great. It's great.
The workshop or the program was 1 week long. How did you structure it? What the youth get to know about? How did they work?
Okay, so basically for you to understand, the methodology we're using here is coming from YPEER, that is an international network of peer education sponsored by the UNFPA, the United Nations Population Fund. And they already have developed open source manuals for that, but only for being to be used by trained people. And I was trained as an advanced trainer of trainers like years ago. And this is why I am able to develop this methodology. And it's very easy to make it context-based. And Anna was an amazing help to make it Auroville applicable, you see, because I'm kind of newer here. So I needed people to assist me in how to make it the most applicable thing in Auroville context. So we worked with this manual. We worked together in that. We modified the things we needed. Mm-hmm. And then Anna put even the first aid course that she's an expert in. So we complemented it to make this whole week kind of intense. It was full time. It was 9 o'clock to 5:30, 6, and then most evenings we had evening programs. But even concerned about this demand, we asked them at the end, like, and the feedback was basically that yes, it was tiring, yes, it was intense, but this was the best way to do it, because they actually appreciated not having to think about anything else beside this thing.
Yes,
and they were completely immersed into the personal journey that was already to experience and to open up their minds and their spirits into other ways of conceiving life and interactions. And I think it's a very replicable model we can do for other batches in the future.
As far as I know, they're also really connected, although they were diverse, but they really connected well, no?
Yeah, actually, I think also it's the fact that it's also so intense that you connect faster also. Mm. But the group connected really well together. And also, like, it was very a safe place for them. They felt, I think they all felt very safe to share and to be there. So it was really great, a really great experience, actually.
It's amazing.
Only two
to
of
see.
You were working on that work? I mean, facilitated that, or you had more helpers in certain areas?
Mostly the two of us, but yeah, with the help of YouthLink. So YouthLink was a great resource. They provided us the place. They assisted with many logistics. And so, yeah, they helped from the beginning. From the very beginning, and me focused more into the imparting and facilitating the training. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to comment a little bit what Anna was saying before, that this group, just for you to make an idea, by having these topics that are so new in the community to be opened and to be talked in such a free state, in this group that you had people from 16 to over 30, and you didn't see the difference. You couldn't realize the age range.
How come?
Because it was so new for people.
Okay, so all they were like they in were a new field.
Exactly, they were experiencing, okay, how do we talk about it? Like, and nobody had a better idea than the other one, because everybody approached it in a very innocent state in these matters. You see, even if they have their own personal experience, the way you approach it in more general, let's say, social perspectives, they were in a very similar position. So I think this gives us a big clue in how to actually work as a community with these topics, because it doesn't have to be related with personal life experiences. It has to be with mindsets, with visions, with paradigms, and the way to open it up and discuss it with everybody. So I think this was a very big example on how to put this in the whole community and how to validate their role in the community.
Actually, that's, I think, also the reason that group formed. And simultaneously, at the same time, on the level, also the Oral Council announced abuse programs or help to with overcome the abuses of different ranges. And also safety and security, it's keep emphasizing those problems, yeah? So are we ready to talk about those things? Are we opening? Are we really trying to address it? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yes, we are.
I'm curious, you know, how this group of youth actually, reacted to that, because it, for them, is really the kind of the first time that you really talk maybe about homosexuality, abuses in drug addictions or sex or what, you know, the ranges are different, yeah.
I think it was very surprising in a way, because when you, like, even though there was not so far open discussions about these topics, you can see that they all have some impressions and some opinions and a lot to say about it. And they have personal connection with all these topics and a lot of emotional engagement. So when you just open the door for them, they can tackle it right away. And they have a lot to share, and in a very open way even, because then they say, okay, this is my experience, this is how I feel it. I would love to see how other people feel, because I don't know other realities. I have not had the access to connect with people living it from a different context than myself, with different feelings than myself, being another gender, having a different sexual orientation or sexual identity. So all these kind of things are just there. It's just a door to be opened. And I think we're completely ready, but we just have to create the spaces for it to be done in a safe way.
So on a concrete level, how they will work? This group, this weekend, they will have the first meeting. They done something in between?
Not really. I think the idea is to have regular meeting with them to talk about how they can implement what they learn in Oroville and where they want, who's going to team up with who. So it's really the beginning for the moment. Mm-hmm. But the idea, yeah, is to see how they can implement and what they can do right now. Mm-hmm. So, and the idea is to meet often so that we can assess also all the difficulties and give them tools to do it in a certain way. So
that they would stay empowered, so to speak. Yeah. Because I know that if you are in a group and then you move away, usually you tend to forget even the valuable tools. If you not use them, if you not implemented, they're forgotten. No?
Exactly. Yeah. So we can actually see it this way, like, this batch or every batch that's going to be trained, they will work on three levels. So they will work on their own personal level, that is how they process all these things and how they can implement this in their own life and how it can change a little bit the way of behaving with the world and their own identity. Second one is the peer educator role in a more informal a way to see it, in which how they are in society and how they may have a role of being more proactive or being more aware of being observing and being able to do first interventions even and talk about with people. And the third level will be the most structured peer educator role, in which they can develop and create sessions. And they will prepare it with all the skills we have given them. Mm-hmm. So, of course, for these three big levels, you need a lot of support. Definitely. So this is why, again, we reinforce, as Anna said before, this is a network. Mm-hmm. This is the Oroville Peer Education Network. The first step was just creating this first Oroville Peer Education training. We're going to train a few batches, and then we'll actually will offer a training for them to develop as trainers of peer educators. So they can even go, and we have already heard the interest to go into the bioregion, to go into different places where they can actually go into vulnerable context and they can train them. But always we'll have the support from us. Mm. You need, so this is the way the network it becomes sustained, but in a very effective way.
Did you have any reactions from the wider community about it? You said you heard that some people were saying, some youngsters were saying they would participate if they would know it. So it is interest for that, yeah?
Yeah, actually I had a lot of really nice feedback about people asking me, oh, I heard about this APED that you did, and can you tell me more about it? So I think there's a big interest in Oroville and it's very needed. So yeah, I do believe that it's the start of a change.
For sure.
Yeah. And the grown-ups?
Yeah, actually a lot of feedback also was from grown-ups or from parents. I had a few parents of the kids that we had, the young people that we had in the training, and few parents who came and told me they loved it. They're super happy to be part of this network, and thank you for doing that. So yeah, it is. I'm actually very happy. I only had very good feedback about it. So
yeah, for me too. It's been surprising how much people that I haven't known yet, like, is approaching me. Yeah, you did the training. Like, that's so amazing. Like, I'm so happy this is happening, and thank you. And So and more actually, people has come even to
everything is coming on the surface, which community knew that it's a problem, and but nobody didn't want to, nobody didn't know how to tackle about it, no?
Hmm.
I mean, it's like abuses of different kinds. You mentioned the bioregion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do live in environment, mm-hmm. and we influence each other, right?
Mm.
So we need to tackle all, not only certain.
I think it's very important to just start observing these phenomena, these issues, not necessarily as problems. You see, if we approach everything starting with the word problem, we're going to have rejection on society and community. So especially, and one of the biggest things we have talked in the training is not to become moralistic.
Mm.
You see, it's very important to open a space for real, for the community to co-create what is the reality happening. Because we make the reality. We are not taking anything from anywhere else. We are developing it. So if we start looking at things as part of life and being comprehensive, being compassionate and being open to hear in different ways, we can start ending this separation of us from problems and what to do with problems. And then we actually tackle this as part of life, and together we can find other ways that can be healthier, more positive, or that just create us this natural trend of us of being in a better way.
Yeah, makes sense. You are in Auroville quite some time already, right?
Yeah, I'm in Auroville since 13 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have also maybe an insight why certain issues pop up and why sometimes we have, I don't want to say a problem, but it's still like when you don't know what to deal with it, you might go in a different way, which is not really healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Auroville, we have a lot of different type of education with different type of school and everything, but we facing the same problem than everywhere else in the world. And when you have teenager, you can have a lot of different way to educate your kids will still arrive to the same issues when teenagers start growing up and have difficulty to talk to their own parents, to their teacher. And that's why the peers educator is actually famous everywhere in the world and works everywhere in the world. And I do think Auroville, we also have a little bit of a taboo. Mm-hmm. About this, the first thing, it's also because we're in India. But the second thing is also it's a very, very small community. So people are always very scared of if we talk, then everyone's going to know.
It's a village, yeah.
So, yeah, it's
in
a village.
In that sense, it's a village. Yeah.
And it's a village. So I do think also it's one of the main thing also will make these topics a little bit more taboo, especially to talk about. So, yeah.
Yeah, and also diversity of cultures, right? Because sometimes in some certain culture it might be offensive, in certain cultures it's not, yeah?
Yeah, we live in India, we are 55 or 54 different nationalities in Auroville, so we also have to take all this in account, and it's very difficult to create just something, just an open... like an open space to talk about everything. It's not that easy. It was not that easy before to find a way to create that with all the different culture and all the different opinion and the fact that it's a small village also.
Yeah.
So like you arrive in a place where, that's your neighbor and that's, you know, like that's the teacher of your kids or whoever, you know, it's, you just know mostly everyone. So it's really complicated to talk about that.
We're all humans, no?
Yeah,
we all have
obviously.
Different approaches or different ways how to deal with our own issues or difficulties and so forth, no?
But that's why I think this program is the best way to tackle this taboo and to arrive in the community because with these 20 people, they're all coming from, they're all different age groups. They're all coming from different backgrounds or different, we had, I think, 11 nationalities in the training. Mm-hmm. And actually with them, that's the best way to manage to be peers in all the different network of inside Auroville, actually. So I do think it's the best way to do it.
Hmm. Somehow I feel that the part of population was relieved when the things start coming out. And I think the community is ready to tackle them or to talk about it or to get help if it's needed or somehow or ask for help if you are stuck somewhere, no? And
exactly.
That's quite a big step, no?
I think exactly as you said, Miriam, it's whenever something is not considered a taboo, it's not considered something that people will talk badly about you, even just the role. For example, my own experience here, I've been just a few months here, but the role as a psychotherapist can be challenging for people to go to see the psychologist. It has some connotation, you know, and it depends on where you're coming from. But again, by just making this thing more open, and even after this, just this training, you know, just by hearing that this is actually connected with community and society, and not necessarily for crazy people, I've been receiving much more people at Sante, you know, because it's just opening up.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Just this week.
It really opened the door.
Yeah.
That's actually really good to hear, no?
And nothing has happened, really. Like, the expected consequences of the training, that is this batch of people actually starting to act in the community, has not started yet. So you see, it's just by word of mouth of validating certain people or certain methodologies or certain visions, and that openness just gives you the space to say, hey, maybe I can talk about these things. Maybe it's not such a stigmatized thing.
That is really cool.
It's impressive, really. Yeah.
I mean, you've seen it in a few months coming up, no? That's like...
But even these weeks, like these 2 weeks, like so much more people has come just because of they heard about the training and heard about me doing it, and they kind of trust a little bit, or they open up themselves into something that may have good intentions. And it's really peculiar because they don't know me.
Well, that's good. You wanted to add to that?
No, actually, it's the word spread very fast, and in Auroville, in a positive way, it can be very fast, and that's why I think you have a lot of new people, and a lot of people are coming to say, oh, great, how many training are you going to do? When is the next one? I think it's a good... it went very fast, actually. I think even very fast, like he said. And I've been living here since many years, and I don't think I've seen a positive effect that fast yet.
Yeah,
so I'm very happy about it.
I think it's also maybe the one part is that people, as you said, they feel comfortable, they feel safe. If you change the viewpoint, it's not a big thing.
Yeah, it's actually funny. In Auroville, we have so many therapists for body, like massage therapists, different type of craniotherapy. I mean, you have a lot of different things. And somehow going through the body was okay, but somehow going through a psychotherapist is still the stigmatization of that. I think with all that, it start to tackle this image of going, okay, I can go for a massage, I can go for all kind of healing, but I can't go to talk. And somehow this is getting...
To you for that. One part is that some therapists here are therapists after a few months courses. So per se, you don't trust a person like that. Yeah. And we are living in the village, and those therapists are also humans. Yeah. That's one thing. And secondly, we have to add that the Auroville, it is a special place still, with the special energies which are surrounding us, which are pushing us to our transformation. When you're on that path, because we were listening to Alok Pandey's talks, and it's really particular that when you're going on a spiritual path, so I think certain difficulties or certain challenges we are facing with them faster maybe than we would face them in a so-called normal society.
Completely. And all these processes need some time, a little bit of guidance, a little bit of help. So I think it's being open. Like most people, after they come to see me in the first sessions, they just say, okay, well, everybody could use a little bit of this. And it's a different... Because people may not know what it's about. So I think that's a lot of things. It's just ignorance on a particular topic. And now that you're talking about spirituality, I think it's also very much connected with that. Because in a way, I think people that try to develop spiritually, they may perceive... And I think this is also has some... Maybe some, let's say... trends from religious cultures, they can try to, and I'm not saying anything yet, I'm just saying that there is a trend that may incorporate any kind of psychological, let's say mental distress or emotional distress, they connect it with spiritual practice. They think the only way to detach themselves from it is with spiritual practice, and they don't actually approach the self process, the individual process in your own identity.
But then you're missing a big point. I mean, you're missing yourself.
Exactly. But usually people do that. They say, like Anna was saying, you treat your body. If you have an ailment, if you feel pain, you go to a therapist, you fix your bones, you get a cast on your shoulder. But if you feel any emotional distress or mental thoughts or obsessive thinking, you say, no, I have to meditate more. And they kind of deny this and you don't deal with it. I think this is a little bit of what people tend to do.
Yeah, you get the point? You got a point, yeah.
Mm. Because otherwise, how people tackle it?
Okay, you can pack things away in the closet in the far corner, but it's just a question of time when it will pop out, no?
Exactly. So this is the question. Okay, so why do we find a therapy for every single spot in our bodies, but we put all these other things on the corner and deny it for a big while until, who knows, maybe I'll see it better in a few years? So this is a good question. And this is exactly the role psychotherapists can have. Or any people actually tackling with the psychological self.
Okay, let me ask you. Do you think that is also one of the reasons that, let's say, the drug abuse of different varieties of drugs, from alcohol to hard drugs, it's so popular here?
I don't like to generalize that much.
Well, I'm not generalizing, but some years back we had a discussion why people, when they're on spiritual path, they need to smoke weed or they need to drink. And somebody just said, oh, maybe because the life is too hard for them. So since you said that, you know, instead of tackling the issue, you meditate more, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking, you think that is the reason that also those abuses come up more in higher numbers than in some other societies?
I would say that anybody that is putting all these things, let's say emotional or mental situations or experiences, in a corner...
Mm.
They're going to have different ways to deal with the accumulation and the explosion of this. Whenever you accumulate things, it explodes. It explodes in your needs. It explodes in the way you're trying to cope with things. And that has so different ways of behavior. And those could be, taking denial from drugs, taking a moment of calm even. They can look for different things. But it's very important to observe the individual elements in each case.
That's true.
But I would say in a general way, yes, we shouldn't keep denying these things. And even with spiritual practice, of course, more things are moving.
Yeah.
So it's more active. So then if you don't cope with a big element of yourself and you put it in the corner, it's going to be more accumulated energy.
You are like on hyperspeed and then all of a sudden the things are pumping up. You need a higher boost to calm down, huh?
In a way.
Maybe,
And that's a little bit what you were saying about Auroville energy, right? Mm. So because there's a drive force here that is higher.
Yeah.
I think we need to take the invitation of the integration of the self. Mm. We're not integrating enough, I think. We're too busy with all these options, with all these possibilities, with all the opportunities, especially in this beautiful...
And it's so exciting, no?
Yeah.
It's like you are really, all of a sudden, you are tangled in so many things that is crazy.
Yeah, but if you forget about the integration, there you're going to have these kind of bursts of energy, of unconscious doing or so many things. So there should be a moment to say, okay, who I am, what am I doing, what is happening, and a little bit of that. And that's what we
out of curiosity, help. Where did you hear about Auroville? What brought you here?
Oof, it's a long story, but very short. The first time I heard about Auroville was seeing... this kind of internet teasers of the map, the plane of the master plan, you know, but
the galaxy.
Yeah, the galaxy formation. And it was just so similar to a project called the Venus Project that cities.
It is, yeah.
And I was a follower of that for a while. And it's just like, whoops, it's happening in a way, but I didn't know anything about it. And then... throughout world trip, Auroville came as a more, let's say, stable or controlled way to explore India. Because I was going to come here, but then I didn't want to go to the raw India right away because I was in Southeast Asia for several months already.
Mm.
So yeah, it just seemed like an international community that did a lot of cultural activities and seemed interesting. But only by arriving here, I could see the real thing.
What is the reality? Yeah. And now you're a newcomer, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm expecting my announcement, but yeah, everything's done so far.
And you, Anne?
I came here the first time 15 years ago. I just finished my degree and just arrived here. And somehow Auroville was, I discovered by arriving in India, I was traveling alone and arrived in Pondicherry. And I discovered Auroville like this. And since then, I just couldn't...
You fell in love?
Yeah, I fell completely in love. I actually was in love already with India, which did help. I was in love with India and I fell in love with Auroville. I remember I said it's the first time I can breathe freely. I was 19 when I arrived and I said that. So, yeah, it was a big...
Yeah, you were a young adult, so to speak, in the threshold to become an adult person.
Yeah, I do think also I grew up here somehow in a part of my... Hmm. Yeah, I grew to be an adult here in India and in Auroville. Yeah.
Nice. And now you're a mother?
Yes.
Of two kids?
Two small boys, yes, 9 and 5. So, yeah, it's a... It is actually when I feel everything goes very fast here.
Things are just happening, no?
So it's it's just very...
Sometimes you don't even have a break and it's just...
Yeah, it goes very fast and I can see the evolution of, since I arrived here and of the even the Indian culture about everything which is around Auroville or how we tackle issues. I suddenly realized after this training, my kids are 9 and 5. I'm 9. It's not so far from adolescence, and it's,
It will go fast, yeah.
Yeah, it'll go fast.
Now it's another more thing. The program Safety and Security for Our Children is coming up, and I think there's a lineup to happen.
We are still working on the best way to present it to the community, but many efforts are being held, and yeah. Be aware, like we're going to launch something. Let's say this group has been a joining of people wanting to do things for the community with a few issues that we have seen around. And I think we're going to present different ways to have opportunities to tackle this. And this peer education program has come from that initial search.
And it shows that we do need it, and it's good if we create the safety environment where people can come forward and if they need help they can receive it.
Yeah, let's stop denying that these things are happening. Yeah, this is the first step.
Thank you so much both, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.